Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi. Before we dive in, if you find our podcast helpful, please take a moment to rate and review it. It really helps us reach more people who need this information. Thank you. And today's episode is especially important for people to find. We're covering the topic of eating disorders. It's a tough one, but it's so important to talk about and learn about. So I really hope lots of people get a chance to listen. Eating disorders are so much more than you may realize. They don't just affect what someone eats or doesn't eat. They impact brain functioning, emotional regulation, and the other critically important executive function skills we use every day. They also deeply affect families, as parents and caregivers struggle to navigate the complexities of identifying the presence of the eating disorder and then supporting a child through recovery. It's a lot, and it's really important to learn about. And I'm so glad you're here listening today. To help us understand these challenges, I sat down with Dr. Emily Gordon, a licensed clinical psychologist who specializes in adolescents and young adults with expertise in eating disorders, body image, and parenting. Dr. Gordon has worked in clinical leadership roles at McLean Hospital, and she helped launch the Klarman Center for Eating Disorders and now runs a private practice in Massachusetts. And she's also the parent of three teenagers. So listen today to learn from Dr. Gordon as she teaches us about the different types of eating disorders, their impact on executive functioning, and the early warning signs that parents should look out for. She also helps us challenge diet culture and debunk some common misconceptions about eating disorders and diets. Dr. Gordon also shares some strategies for supporting kids and what caregivers can do for themselves. If you're a parent navigating these challenges, you are not alone. Supporting a child through something like this can be very overwhelming, and I've seen in my own experience that many families find that the addition of executive function coaching helps bring structure and support in times of stress. If you're curious to learn more about how we help at Beyond Booksmart, you can visit our website, beyondbooksmart.com. Okay, let's get on with the show. Hi, Emily. Thanks so much for joining me on Focus Forward.
Hi, Hannah. I'm so happy to be here. I love talking about things that are important for people to know and understand.
Yeah, I am the same way. So would you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. My name is Dr. Emily Gordon. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist in Massachusetts. I'm also licensed to practice in Vermont and virtually in Florida. So I've been in private practice. I can't believe that it's close to 25 years. I started out my career at McLean Hospital, which is a psychiatric hospital here in Boston. I had an appointment to Harvard Medical School and started my career working with adolescents in a general residential program. And worked in an eating disorder unit that started there. And since then, I have been working in my practice with teenagers, young adults, adults navigating eating disorders, body image, relationships, parenting, trauma, all sorts of really important and difficult things.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so thankful to you for providing that to them because I know they need it so much. My kids are both teenagers right now, so it's real.
It's very real.
Yeah, it's very real.
It's very real. It's very hard. Yeah. It's very important. And I think sometimes I sort of forget, right, that for those of us that aren't steeped in this and doing this, you know, day in, day out, hour after hour, that there's really a lot out there to know and to think about and to consider. And ultimately, I think why I'm here, why I like to get out of my office is that also as a parent myself, and just working with so many teens and young adults over the years, what I know in my heart and in my whole being is that parenting really matters, and understanding what is going on inside teenagers is so important, both for the teenagers, for ourselves, just as, you know, for our own well-being and sort of confidence and happiness, and also I say this, it feels very big, but I really believe it to be true, like for the future of the world.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
So.
absolutely. Yeah, and we have to be careful, so careful, not to assume what that we know. And so I love that you use the verb to find out because, we really do. We can't assume. We're not teenagers. We're not growing up in that world. So, yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for bringing your wisdom and your expertise and your life experience both as a parent and as a professional. So I'm so glad you're here today. So we're going to talk about eating disorders and the impact that eating disorders can have on children and on parents and families and on the brain and executive function skills. And so I was wondering if we could just start off with a little primer into it about not executive function skills, we know about those, about eating disorders. And if you could share just like a general overview, maybe for any listeners who aren't familiar with the different types, and then maybe we can get into how those eating disorders may impact, brain development and just cognitive processes.
Absolutely. That
Thank you.
seems like a good place to start.
Yeah.
So the first thing I want to say about eating disorders, generally speaking, right, is that eating disorders are a really serious condition that have very severe consequences. So they're very real and they're very serious. And so it's important that we be able to recognize the signs and understand what's going on, that so that we can get kids and adults treatment, because there is treatment out there and available, and it works. And I think that there is overall sort of an under awareness, right? And an under people do not seek treatment as much as we know they're suffering. And so that's another reason why it's important to be here and talk about these
Yeah, so
things.
important. Yep.
So there's essentially, in our diagnostic manual, there's a couple of categories. One is anorexia, which is more defined as restrictive eating, not being able to adhere to healthy weight and functioning. It's really characterized by a severe preoccupation with food and body and eating, often a distortion in the way one perceives one body. And really is like a fear of being a size that one sees as undesirable. We sort of call that a fear of fatness. And that's what is the hallmark of anorexia. Bulimia has a lot of the same categories, but it's restriction followed by ways of, restriction can be a part of it. It's periods of overeating, feeling out of control, what we call binging, and then efforts to compensate to make up for that food that has been consumed. And there's all sorts of ways that people can do that. And it's important not to assume, but to really be curious and try to understand all of the different ways that that could be happening. Bulimia is also characterized by that intense dislike of one's body and sort of fears of what one might look like. Binge eating disorder is similar to bulimia in that it has the binge episodes, which is eating an objectively large amount of food and feeling that really the hallmark is like feeling out of control over that food consumption. But binge eating disorder does not have the compensation behaviors that are associated with it. And binge eating is actually the most common eating disorder that we have, other than our NOS category. Then there's another form of an eating disorder which is more prevalent amongst young kids, and I think is one of the ones that we're learning more about, and there's more resources developed for this, which is called ARFID, avoidant restrictive feeding disorder. And that's not so much characterized by a distortion of one's perception of their body. It's not really driven by a fear of appearance or gaining weight, but it's really just like a sensory sensitivity, like extreme pickiness around food. Can have food rituals. There's a rigidity around it, and a lot of times that ARFID is kind of goes along with a failure to thrive, or like in a, it doesn't, the child is not meeting their growth targets, because they're just really restricted but picky and selective. And there's one more piece about that that I wanted to add. Oh, there's oftentimes like a disconnection, or, right? Like they either don't feel hungry or aren't interested in eating, or feel nauseous, or feel some sort of a physiologic response to eating. So that is increasingly common amongst younger kids. So we're seeing that more and more.
Do you think you're seeing it more and more because there's more conversation about it, and more awareness of it, or is it truly happening more?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure that I know. I think we're seeing it more. I think we're seeing it more.
Just curious.
Yeah.
So all of those, how, I mean, I know how my executive function skills are impacted when I'm hungry.
Right.
Like, I don't function well at all if I'm
Yeah.
hungry.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine that you, I mean, if you are restricting your food, or the opposite, eating so much food, it's got to impact your brain and it's got to impact behavior.
It absolutely impacts your brain. And as I was thinking about us talking today, and I was thinking about the ways in which eating disorders affect executive functioning. So I sort of organize it in two different categories, right? So the first category is absolutely there is the, what we know about eating disorders is they involve eating, which involves our health and our physical wellness and the way we feel. And so, of course, the symptoms that go along with the eating disorder absolutely affect executive functioning, right? So when we're not nourished, our brain is not working properly. We can be dizzy, foggy, have difficulty with attention, difficulty with memory. Have a hard time
Regulating, I mean, so much
regulating
impulse
things,
control.
right? Impulse, like everything.
Everything.
So certainly not be like our brain not being nourished impacts our cognitive functioning. As does, binging and purging, right? Like that dysregulates your system. It throws off your electrolytes. It throw, you know, that can cause, that has cardiac risks. It has, risks of dizziness and fainting. So, just that, like the lability, right? But sort of the shifts in your body, that can really impact your concentration, your focus, your memory. So there is the impact on executive functioning from the eating or lack of eating, or the nutrition, the lack of nutrition, and the behaviors that go along with the disorder. But there's also the part of executive functioning that is compromised by the eating disorder itself, by like the qualities of the eating disorder. And this is the part that I think that until you have known or sat with or experienced somebody who has an eating disorder, it's really, really hard to appreciate the intensity, the intrusiveness, the preoccupation, the sort of like torturedness of the disorder. So what happens for people who are suffering from this condition is that they are preoccupied with food and body and thoughts about what they ate and what they didn't eat and what they should have eaten and what's going to happen if they eat or don't eat and what are they going to do next because of what they did last and what are they going to do tomorrow and what's my mom making for dinner and where are we going to eat tonight? And so they are preoccupied with all of that. It's like, for those of us in our generation, it's like there's a cassette player, sort of running in the background, right? There's this narrative, and it's just going all the time, and it's self-critical and it's fear-based and it's nasty and it's really, really, really hard. And so when you are consumed with that all day long, it takes so much energy and it takes so much space that it, that in our brains that kids, people, individuals just don't have the space to be present for whatever the demands that are required when they are present, right? You
Yeah.
can't be sitting in class and paying attention. You can't remember what you're supposed to do. You can't, be interested in math. You become less interested in social connections and relationships. It really just takes over. And
Wow.
so that's the part about executive functioning that I think is less understood, is just the degree to which the eating disorder itself like takes up space.
Yeah, I had never thought about that. Oh, how sad.
It's really torturous.
Yeah, that's, I mean,
It's,
that's the only word that I can think of is torturous.
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really
Oh,
painful.
that's so hard.
Yeah.
Oh. So that's, I mean, like we would never wish that upon anybody,
No, we would
right?
not.
Ever, ever.
No.
So how can we, what can we do? Like how can we, what can we look for? What be, what I feel like we really need a manual on what we can do as parents, or if you're not a parent, just someone who interacts with kids.
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And it's a really fraught question in this culture that we live in,
Yeah.
where there is so much focus on bodies and food and
Yeah,
health.
yeah.
I think. Let me take a deep breath because that's a
Yeah.
really important question. So,
Yeah.
the first thing I can talk about is just what are the signs to look for, right? Because that's
Yeah.
concrete. So,
Yeah. Yeah.
one of the things that I think is important to look for is changes, right? When things are changing in either your kid or a teenager or even an adult friend that you have, when there's something happening that feels different, it's important to pay attention to that. There's physical changes that can happen to people when they have developed an eating disorder, weight changes in either direction. Hair and skin can change, nails can become more brittle. They can have things like feeling shortness of breath, dizziness, and fainting. There's signs of purging that we look for, sort of swollenness in the face, a lot of GI complaints, right? Like sort of things going on in the stomach that don't really seem to be explainable or understandable, decreases in appetite, cold intolerance. So those are like physical changes that we see. Of course, when we see those things, it's could be something else besides an eating disorder, but we just sort of have to have a light bulb that goes off that reminds us, I wonder what's going on here. And sometimes we have to rule other things out before we can get to this conclusion. And then there's a lot of like mood and behavior changes, right? Like irritability, isolation or withdrawal, like difficulty around the house, disinterest in things that were previously interesting or meaningful to somebody, lots of time in front of mirrors, overemphasis on one's appearance, comments about, like, I want to be healthy or I want to go on a diet or I'm really trying to get in shape, which is not necessarily indicative of an eating
Yeah,
disorder, but those are
right.
things that we want to really, really, really look at and be really careful about. So, like changes in behavior, changes in mood, things that just sort of don't seem right.
So is it, I'm just trying to think, like, is it appropriate for us to say to our kids the same thing? Like, hey, if you ever notice that your friends seem different, like something has changed, is that something that we should tell them? Like, tell somebody, tell me if you ever notice that in your friends.
Certainly could. I mean, I think that's a kind of like a nice message just in general, right?
Yeah,
To be
that's
a good
true.
friend. Because look, I mean, a lot of these changes that I'm describing, think this is what's so overwhelming and scary for parents is that we don't know, we can notice what's happening, right? We can notice the change, but we don't really know why or what's going on. So yeah, I mean, oftentimes, when we notice that our friend is more withdrawn or preoccupied or, sort of not really around or kind of cranky and snapping at us, we want to be concerned and we want to like kind of step back and say, I wonder what this person is going through and what I could do. We want to be careful about not putting too much burden on kids, right? But I liked what you said about, come talk to me or talk to somebody at school, because I think we want kids to know that, if they notice something, that that's important information to pass along, but they're not responsible.
I
Not
just
their job.
the reason I ask that is because I had an experience as a child where I noticed that, but I didn't know what to do. So I just didn't do anything. And then I found out years later that I absolutely should have, not should have, right? Because I was a child,
But that you were
but
picking up on something that
I
was, in
was
fact,
right.
going on.
I was really right. Yeah, and I didn't know what to do. But also at the same time, like what you said, we don't want to burden our children.
No,
And
but I
I've
think
carried that.
overall, yeah, that's hard. And I think, sometimes there aren't things we can do, but what we can do is bring it to the attention of somebody that might know better what to do. And that's ultimately what we want. And these days, not to mark our age, but these days, I think kids are, they have more information available to
They
them.
do.
So, I think a lot of times, like, it's really striking to me sometimes, what kids actually know, what they're exposed to, what they see. And so, kids, they may not be wondering so much what might be, they might actually have some ideas about what it is. So that answers your question, I think, around like what to look for. I think that what gets really tricky is a lot of these, I don't know if I want to say behaviors, but a lot of these ideas and goals have a way in our culture of being idealized or sort of normalized, right? And so there are places where, being healthy, being active, going on a diet, that those are things that are seen as positive. And I'm not saying that it's not important to be healthy and fit, but I think it's really important. One of the warning signs is when somebody's efforts to reach those goals become too rigid, right? Or it feels like they're taking over somebody's life and sort of getting in the way of other things. So of course, we want kids to be healthy, we want them to be active, but when they're spending 3 hours at the gym or not going to a social event or not doing their homework because they feel compelled, to do something physically, like that's a pretty clear sign that something is amiss. So we really have to look at the degree, the intrusiveness, and the balance of these things.
So if you notice these changes, or if you wonder if something's going on, I imagine the relationship that you have with your child might impact how you manage it and how you address the issue. Can you talk a little bit about what parents can do to help their kid and to, like, I don't know, because I imagine if someone, they might already be feeling guilty about those obsessive feelings.
Yeah, so
So,
I would
yeah, it's
say
tricky.
that the relationship with your kid can influence how you intervene, as can the age of your child, as can the degree of your concern. I think that one of the things that's really important that I think a lot of parents say after the fact is like they didn't know the warning signs and they wish they had known the warning signs, and kind of your example about even when you were a kid, and so I think that it's always better to err on the side of caution or like over concern, which doesn't mean that you go in there with like over concern. It doesn't mean you go in there, you know. So, but that if there's something that is on your mind that you're noticing that you're wondering about, I think that it's important to raise it. And so again, depending on your child, depending on the way, you know, their age, that like, but you know, you can simply say, I've noticed such and such. Can you tell me more about what's going on? Or I'm noticing this, and it's seeming like maybe you're not taking care of your body in, you know, a great way. Can we talk about this? Or, you know, I'm really worried that you are, you know, you seem like you're not eating or you're skipping meals or you're making excuses. And I think we really need to get Dr. So-and-so's take on this. But to make sure that you frame it from a place of curiosity and concern and not criticism and judgment is really, really important. I think the other really necessary piece about understanding eating disorders is that people who struggle with eating disorders have a lot of ambivalence. And so there is a way in which the behavior, the positive feedback that they might be getting for the weight loss or for the changes, there is a way in which something that's working for them, which sounds counterintuitive. It sounds like that's not possible, but there is something about this behavior, the rituals, the impact of the behaviors that is helping somebody to feel better, at least at the beginning, because that's a lot of times where this starts, is like, I want to feel better about myself and my, you know, in a certain way. So, like, I'm going to try to be more healthy, or I'm going to try to look a certain way. So, when you're talking to someone about your concern, it's important to know that when you call attention to it, something in their brain is going to, like, a flag is going to go up for them, and they're going to be scared. And they're going to really be panicked about, like, you're going to take this away from them. And that could be for a lot of different reasons. And also, they might really recognize how much this is impacting them and how badly they're feeling and how scared they are about their own physical or mental health or about their future or about like what's going to happen at school or like so it's important to know that your child, teenager, like is going to have a lot of different feelings about you bringing this up with them, and that if you can like identify, you know, sort of acknowledge those feelings or validate those feelings, speak to them somehow, that would also go a really long way.
Oh, yeah. I know that validation piece is huge, especially if you're already feeling maybe not so good about it inside.
Lots of mixed feelings.
What about ourselves? Like, how does it impact parents, or how could it impact parents? And how can we make sure that we have to meet our own needs so that we can stay regulated in a conversation with our
I
child
love that
about this,
I
like,
love that you
impossible
asked that
thing?
question because that is so critically important.
Yeah,
And it's important, and we can talk about like how to approach that conversation and how to stay regulated and be mindful and be effective. But it's also important when you are a parent who is dealing with a child or a teenager or a family member who has an eating disorder, because it's incredibly difficult and really painful to have a loved one who's going through this. So let's stick with the first part first, which is having this conversation, right? So just knowing that this is going to be a difficult conversation, but that it's kind of our job as parents is to have these difficult conversations, and we don't have to like it, but we have to have them anyway. So just knowing that and sort of gearing yourself up for that, however you need to regulate yourself, you know, taking deep breaths, like having a mantra, reminding yourself, like, this is my kid's health, like, this is important, I need to do this. Those are all That's useful. A lot, something that I do a lot, and I recommend this, is to give kids either some choice in, they don't have a choice about having this conversation, but you can give them some choices around, like, there's something that I'd really like to discuss with you. When would be a good time for you?
That's a good idea.
Or, I have something that I'm warning, I'm just letting you know, like, I have something, it's on my mind. It might be a hard conversation for us to have, but it's really important, and I'd like to do that this weekend. Can you tell me when would be a good time? You can even give them a preview of what it is that you're concerned about, as a way so they don't feel like kind of ganged up on or surprised. So those, I think, are some strategies to gearing yourself and sort of staying regulated. I think along with that is the idea that to have some self-talk, like as you go through it, right? This is important. This is this is my child's health. Stay calm, focus on validating. Make sure my kid feels like they matter and that I love them no matter what. Like, whatever it is that you need to tell yourself through this conversation, that's a really useful strategy too.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's something else that I just thought of is, so like a lot of the messages that we heard growing up, there was just so much, just these casual comments thrown around, about weight or about, eating or and we probably can't even identify some of them because we're just so used to hearing them in everyday language, or maybe we grew up hearing them. Maybe they're not as accepted today. But how can we? I mean, I think I can answer this question, but I think it's important to address that we need to pay attention to the messages that we may be inadvertently sending to our kids or to each
Oh boy.
other, to our
Hannah.
partners.
Yes. Okay.
Not that
So,
we already have so much on our shoulders, but here's like another thing that we need to pay attention to.
this is, I mean, we could spend hours
Yeah,
talking about this,
hours.
right? So, and I think I'm really glad you brought it up because, and it touches on every part of the conversation that we've already had, right? So, yes, what we can't avoid is this thing called diet culture,
Yeah.
right? We can't avoid the sort of billion-dollar industries that are out there fueling diet culture. And so, there is, whether it's in social media or whether it's in our generation or even like older generations, and this idea that, being that values thinness, that equates thinness with health, and that is wants to tell us just the right thing that we can do to make everything feel better, which often is pushing us towards being thin, being smaller, being healthy, being fit, sort of all of these things. And it also comes with the message that because you can do these things, because you can make a choice about being healthy, that therefore you
You
should.
should. Yeah.
And that if you don't, you're somehow not as good as somebody else who is making that choice. So it's so problematic for so many different reasons, right? One is it is pushing people towards this belief that there is a right way and a wrong way. And it is also, marginalizing and pathologizing people, bodies, shapes, colors, genders that don't fit that mainstream narrative. And so that is like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Which is the more people feel like they don't belong and sort of aren't acceptable, the more terribly they feel about themselves, and the more they have to cope with, which sort of leads them back down paths of, coping skills that are ultimately not helpful. So Right. So a lot of us come to parenting with these ideas about our own bodies, about our own experiences, about what we think our kids should be doing, about what other kids are doing. And a lot of what we come to parenting with too are like our fears, right? Like our desire to protect our kids or to help them or to make sure that things aren't difficult for them or like, and so we get really bogged down in that stuff, and it's really hard to tease it out and to take it away from out of the equation.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about like my own experience. Like I try not to eat a lot of sweets, not because I don't want to gain weight, but because I just don't feel good when I eat sugar. And so I always feel like I should say, I'm choosing not to eat this because I don't like how I feel in my head and in my body, not because I'm worried about gaining weight. Like I always feel like I need to make this announcement, you know, like it's to be almost overly open about my behavior choices. But then I think that's also kind of weird.
Well, look,
So
I
I don't know.
appreciate that because at least there's some self-awareness around like this is what's happening, and my kid might be noticing this. I've told this story before. I am someone that has this, you know, I enjoy sweet food
Me
and I
too.
eat it. When my kids were younger, it was something that I did later, you know, sort of after they were in bed. Not because I was hiding it from them, but just because that was a time in my day where I could enjoy it. My daughter once made a comment. I was floored. You know, she was a toddler, I don't know, young elementary kid, and she said something like, "Well, Mom, you don't eat dessert." And I mean, like I was seriously befuddled. Like I couldn't quite understand how she had gotten to that conclusion. It like just makes no sense based on me. And if I finally realized, like somehow she observed that.
She never saw it. Yeah,
I
that's
mean,
so
again, like she's
interesting.
probably like 4 years. I don't know how old she was, but like, so I think you're right that our kids are noticing. And so I think you probably don't have to be like overly explicit about it, right? But that's something that I'm noticing too, right? As I get older, my body is changing and different foods and different things are impacting me in different ways. I need more sleep. Like things are changing. And so, you know, that's a reality. And I think that it's actually an important lesson that bodies change, needs change. And it's important to be able to recognize what those signs are in myself that I am taking care of that. And I actually may not like it all the time. Like some of the things that are changing, I don't really like and I really miss or I wish could be different. But that's the way it is. And that's what I need to do in order to feel good and sort of energetic or whatever it is. So I think if there's a way to at least acknowledge the things you notice about yourself and sort of how you make adjustments to take care of yourself. Because the other thing that's super important about parenting, especially around food and body and self-esteem and eating disorders, is that the most important thing is that we are teaching our kids to take care of themselves. And what that means is that they are tuning in and they are understanding how things are for themselves. Because this word that we use, healthy, is an important word population-wise, but healthy, there's not a one-size-fits-all model of health, right? Health is really an individual thing, right? You know, you have a child who has an allergy, right? I mean, so something like, you know, strawberries or peanuts or dairy, like whatever it is, you know, so that's a great, allergies are a great example of like something that's healthy for one person is not healthy for another. So what we really want is kids to be able to tune out all of those messages that are coming at them all the time, from everywhere
without
about
them
what
even
they,
realizing.
without them even realizing
Yeah.
about what they should do and what they shouldn't do and what's the right thing. I mean, of course, again, there are these general sort of things that we generally know to be true, but even still, we want kids to have the ability to make those decisions for themselves. And that's tricky with parenting because we want to tell our kids, but we also can't really tell our kids.
Yeah. Oh,
And
it's so
that makes
hard.
it's so hard, right? And
Yeah.
again, depends on the age, depends on the issue and the behavior that's happening. But you know, we have to get like we have to let them know that we trust them, they can handle it, and that they can figure this out for themselves. Which, getting back to your question of tolerating your own feelings, like may mean that we have to tolerate our kids making a choice that we don't think is that it is healthy, or it may not be like the best choice, but that over time they are going to learn,
Figure it out. Yeah.
figure it out.
That makes me think so much of this like skill of like metacognitive thinking, like paying attention to how we work and how we think, that self-awareness, and how, so most of the clients that I work with are college students, and I have had some college students who still are learning how their experience feels in their body, just the experience of being alive feels in their bodies. And we were talking about how you can introduce those skills at such an early age by just asking kids, like, was that easy or hard for you? Or, what does that feel like, or
Well, I
whatever.
so I think that's such a great observation for so many reasons, right? Number one, let's remember the brain is still developing through the mid-20s,
Yeah,
right? So
yeah.
of course your college students are still figuring that out. I mean, and again, you and I just gave examples of things that are changing for ourselves as we get, I mean, my brain has developed, but things change. So one is important to remember that is that the brain is developing, and that brings us back to like what is happening in adolescence, just generally speaking, as we are talking about executive functioning and development and the development of eating disorders and self-awareness, right? Is that those capacities, you know, don't really exist in early adolescence. And so that is a time when parents might take a more structured, you know, directive role. But I can also tell you, like, you know, if you think about it, right, when your kids are younger, you know, you give them a serving, like you may determine servings. You know, you might not, you might give them a little bit more leeway and self-control, but you know, certainly when they get into adolescence, like you're not there kind of policing their quantities. Although you may have to be a guide. So, you know, so it's a good reminder that the brain and the skills is developing and changing, as is our role as parents and like guideposts.
Yeah. Just thinking about my own experience growing up, I didn't eat any, I very rarely ate sugar growing up. And then I remember I got a job working at a gift shop, and there was like a candy section of the gift shop. Oh, I got a lot of sugar during those years. But now, as an adult, I mean, I love sweets, right? I love them, but I have learned to pay attention to how they make me feel, and now I can trust myself around like a candy shop, yeah.
But again, so many important parts of what you just said, because so A, you had to go through the experience probably of overdoing
Oh
it, right?
yeah,
Or
I remember.
eating or doing sort of past the point of comfort and
Yeah.
feeling good. Because look, we all learn by experience. We don't learn by being told. We learn by experience. And you know, also that's sort of a that's part of why we want to stay away from these ideas of like all or nothing foods, or you know, there's good foods and bad foods, or there's healthy foods and unhealthy foods. Because what happens is when we deprive ourselves, right, then when we are exposed to something, we sort of lose the ability to control a little bit our exposure or our consumption. So we really don't want people to be like swinging between those things. We want people to just learn that they can, sort of have something and have some flexibility, and there aren't things that are off limits and moderation. And so again, I think that's really hard as parents because, of course, like our goals are to raise healthy kids. And so we come to it with our best ability to sort of determine what we think is healthy. But I do think we all need to really examine what our definitions of health are and to be really thoughtful about that. And did that come from a not so great model? Did that come from like messages in the culture? Like, where is that coming from?
More metacognitive thinking. Why do I think this way? Are there any like misconceptions about eating disorders that might impact someone's thinking about eating disorders?
That's a really good question. I actually think there's a couple. So one is that there's sort of this perception that like nobody feels good about their bodies, right? Or like everybody's on a diet, which I think minimizes and underestimates the severity of eating disorders and actually being on a diet. Because there's a lot of research over the years that has shown us that diets don't work. They don't work for the goals that people go on them for, which is to, achieve weight loss or health outcomes, because diets, because of what we said before, in terms of like the all or nothingness or the moralizing of food or the sort of off limits, like it's really hard to adhere to a restrictive, like elimination diet for prolonged periods of time. So there's a lot of research that says that diets don't work for the intended goal. And we also have a lot of research that tells us that being on a diet is actually one of the predictors of having an eating disorder. Because what happens is that people try to, nobody wakes up and says, I'm going to have an eating disorder today, right? Especially given what how I described, like what it's actually like. Like nobody wants that. Nobody wants that for anybody in themselves or anyone in their lives. But what happens is that for some people, when you start to make a change, even if it's a small change, something happens neurobiologically in the brain and it triggers more change and more rigidity. And so that's where, again, we want to be really careful at sort of looking at, okay, like my kids said they wanted to try to be more healthy, but like, how are they doing that? Because we really find that it's a slippery slope. And so that is one big misperception out there that like it's okay to be on a diet, which I know goes contrary to like our culture at large, but as an eating disorder provider, that I like strongly and firmly believe that. Another common misperception is that if you don't look like the typical picture of someone who has an eating disorder, that you don't have one or that it's not as serious. And that is one that is so important to debunk. For several reasons. One is that, well, yes, it is absolutely true that when you are underweight and malnourished, is very severe and very dangerous. So that is true. But also, just because somebody does not look malnourished does not mean that they aren't, right? So what we're seeing is that even people in larger bodies who have lost a certain, like whatever the percentage is of their body weight, while they still may, quote, look like they are not starving, the percentage that they have lost is quite dangerous for them. A lot of times, in terms of cardiac functioning, and other ways too. And one of the other problems with this misunderstanding is that people are, I think, less likely to seek treatment or to acknowledge that they are suffering because they sort of feel like, well, I don't really look like that, or like, well, my kid still looks okay. But, the message being, we can't, like, health is not indicated by appearance. Right. Health is again, a very individual internal thing. And so it's so important to call attention to that misunderstanding. Another, which is also goes along with the idea that, like, if you're in a larger body, you can't have an eating disorder, right? Especially if we go back to what I said earlier when I was just describing, like, sort of how rigid and consuming and torturous it is to have an eating disorder, right? So even if somebody is physically okay, if they are suffering from any of that mental distress, like, that is so awful. And we want to have people to know that they don't have to suffer from that, and that there is help out there, and that that's still very concerning for all of the reasons that we talked about all the other implications that it can have.
So what does help look like? What does treatment look
Yeah,
like?
great
And
question.
how long does it take, or is it just sort of a lifelong journey?
So that is a really good question. Very individual answer, but the couple important things. So one is that help for an eating disorder is absolutely available. There's lots of really wonderful organizations and clinicians and people out there. It works, treatment works, but it is hard. What we know is that when we catch it a little bit earlier, right? Like when we can address the thinking, the behaviors before it's really become entrenched in the brain, our treatment is a lot more, I don't know what I want to say, effective, but it's not as long. So that's another reason for sort of noticing the warning signs and really not minimizing these signs and symptoms and these disorders and making sure that people get the help. But it can, I mean, and the other piece of it is that it needs to be multidisciplinary, right? Because what I'm describing to you is that, you know, it's clearly psychological, but it's eating. And so eating, you know, is behavioral. So we oftentimes we want nutritionists, dietitians, we need medical providers. Oftentimes there's a family piece because this is so difficult on family members. So it really is, you know, it's time consuming, it's resource consuming, but it's also important and necessary.
Well, thank you so much for coming today and sharing all this. Oh, it's just so important. I really hope that everybody listens to this it just breaks my heart to think about people out there that are really struggling with this. So if you know anybody, if you're listening and you know anybody and you need help, be sure to reach out for help because it's critical.
It's critical.
And that's our show for today. Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen. My biggest takeaway from my conversation with Dr. Gordon is that eating disorders are about so much more than food. They affect executive functioning, emotional regulation, and the entire family dynamic. It is a lot. Recovery is complex, but with the right support for everyone involved, it is possible. And if you know anyone who might benefit from learning more about the impact of eating disorders and how to support a loved one, please share this episode with them. We appreciate it so much. That word of mouth keeps us on the air. And don't forget to check the show notes for more information about Dr. Gordon and some resources on eating disorders and executive function support. Please review us on Apple or Spotify. It makes a big difference for us. Sign up for our subscriber email at beyondbooksmart.com/podcast. And many thanks to my team here at Beyond Booksmart. Sean Potts and Justice Abbott are my support people. Oh, I just love them. And thank you so much to Dr. Gordon for joining me for this important conversation. And many thanks to my colleague, Wendy Craven, for connecting me with her. Thanks for listening.